This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 50 for April 16th, 2006, our semi-centennial. Our 50th TWiT, and I guess if you include some of the other ones, this is probably almost our one-year anniversary. I don't know if it's this week or next, but that's pretty exciting. Let me introduce the TWiTs. Of course, John C. Dvorak, who came in late on TWiT, I think episode 20 or 25, but has become a stalwart in the intervening episodes. We couldn't do it without you, John.
I came in to save the show.
You saved it. And then, of course, you started Cranky Geeks, and you're just going to pull a rug right out from under it. But that's okay. I'm not going to hold any grudges.
You are paranoid, but you love me for it.
No, you know me. I'm just jealous. Roger Chang is also here, who has been with us since the pilot episode.
Yeah, missed a few in between.
Yeah, well, you know, we can't all be on. I've missed a few, too. We have a new TWiT with us. He's been on a couple of times before recorded, but We got brave, and we decided we'd try Skyping across the pond on the line from Oxford, UK. It is Will Harris, the editor-in-chief of bit-tech.net. Hey, Will.
Hey, how's it going? It is very late over here, so I hopefully won't be too boring.
Well, it's not. What, it's 11 at night?
Yeah, it's been a long day.
Has it?
Very much so. My router at home decided to die this afternoon.
Ooh.
And of course it's Easter Sunday, so you can't go and buy anything. Well, so I had to drive like a couple of hours to my girlfriend's parents' house.
Probably because of us, right? You wouldn't have needed a router if you weren't doing TWiT this afternoon.
So
I apologize.
I couldn't resist.
Now we should translate. In Britain and Australia, they say router. And that's a router.
Sorry, over here a router is what you do with like wood.
Well,
or plastic or something.
You know, it's funny because in Australia, routing is what you do with wood as well, but it's a whole nother thing. So, only Roger got that one. Hey, Roger,
so I got it.
Turn your mic down a little bit, Roger, because you're a little hotter than the rest of them. So, I was explaining to the gang before. Oh, and by the way, we apologize. Robert Heron was slated to be with us, and his mic was so noisy we just kind of dumped him out. But
poor old Robert.
I felt bad, but it was nothing we could do. This show is going to be just a little bit short, I think, because there wasn't a whole lot of news. Dvorak brought us the best news on his blog, dvorak.org/blog.
Hey, beat me to the plug.
Dvorak.org/blog.
Yeah, it'll be one word eventually.
That's the subliminal version.
Yeah, apparently I got some email from one of the writers at Alias, which is coming back on Wednesday, finally, for us old Alias fans who apparently he listens to TWiT. Breen Fraser is one of the writers there. He says that he tried to slip in a reference to the TWiT show into the way the writers like to do. You slip in these casual references that are kind of inside gags.
Right.
And he got them all eliminated. He's got one left he's going to have. It's going to be about somehow. And he's kind of challenging people to see if they can find it. So I'm guessing it'd be something like a like something on a screenshot, like if somebody's like, you know, looking at their computer and they'll be like maybe on the TWiT homepage and then they'll switch it, you know, for something like that is my guess.
Somebody in your blog said that they'd say another TWiT is in the can or something like that.
That, you know, it's always possible, but I think that's a stretch.
That's hard to get it in. And you said that originally he had written our names into as the villains' names?
Well, we all had a reference, apparently, and then apparently some Disney suit, you know, said this is nonsense, and he pulled it off.
Why? He probably didn't even know who we were.
He just didn't like the names, I guess. I have no idea.
You can't kill a guy named Dvorak, the Ukrainian group.
Who would be like... cool with that?
The joke is that's exactly what the word was on the Dvorak character.
You can't
There's nobody named that with a name like that.
And Leo Laporte, that sounds gay. You can't, we'll offend the gay audience.
Well, you know, it's ABC.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's
great.
But
can't you get Can't you get Alias now downloaded from AOL?
I think that's the new thing. Everybody's making it possible to watch their shows. Is Alias one of the shows that'll be on night
yeah,
of?
Yeah, Alias you can get on AOL.
Aren't they older episodes, though? Or are they current ones?
Yeah, those are old episodes. But the thing is that Alias needs to be watched in HD on a big screen so you can really get the benefits. So you can
get I don't know. The quality's... I mean, I'm gonna say flat out. I enjoy the earlier seasons, but of late... I mean,
John just loves Jennifer Garner. Let's face it.
You know, well, she looks good on the blog, let me tell you that.
Well, that's a hot picture. What is she wearing? It looks like her dress was poured
vinyl
on.
Or something. I don't know. Yeah. But anyway, I agree with you, Roger. The show is not what it... But, you know, they wouldn't allow it. In fact, if you listen to this guy tell the story, they had some really good storylines that the executives started focus grouping the show, and the next thing you know, it gets pretty
bad. Why do people do that? I don't know. Like some of these focus, it's like they pull people out of like the four corners of like where no one lives, and then they decide, oh, well, I don't like that. It's like everything always gets wishy-washy.
This is the problem. Focus groups are killing this country. Let me tell you this, an interesting story. Actually, I got a letter today about one of these. But I have a General Motors executive wrote me once talking about, or he's an engineer, and he told me that they had designed a doorknob for some new cars that was going to save the company. Like, it was going to half as much to manufacture, easier to use, easier to install. Everything was good about it, and they couldn't green light the thing because the focus groups hadn't approved it. They can't do anything at General Motors unless the focus groups approve it.
It's not just
who's designing these cars.
Is that why like all GM cars tend to look the same and have the same?
And they all suck.
Yeah, it's not just focus groups. It's design by committee. It's writing by committee. It's having too many cooks in anything.
Well, one of the problems with GM is that they have to. One of their preoccupations is to find how many of the parts they already make they can recycle into a new model. So instead of trying to flat out build from scratch, we could borrow this from a.
Well, that makes sense. That's just economy.
But isn't that the problem with a lot of software, though, that too much of it is designed by committee and that the teams on it are too big and you can't change anything without having to go through so many bits of approval and you just basically like kill any kind of innovation that's going on?
I think that's why like a lot of the kind of really cool products that people see always come from organizations or companies ever heard of.
Isn't that the whole point of like Web 2 is that all these new teams that are producing the cool stuff are very small and they haven't got the bureaucracy and the rubbish to go through and they can just throw something in there and if it works, it works.
Those layers of bureaucracy are one thing, but also team size does make a difference. With software, there's a diminishing returns, and it actually reverses out when you get the bigger and bigger groups together. It takes longer and longer.
They say that with Microsoft keeps wanting to change the way that it develops Windows, or so the story goes, because there's so many teams now working on it that it just becomes such a nightmare to try and pull together.
They should have a Windows Olympiad.
I think they should do it competitively. I think you're onto something. You could say to two different teams, all right, you're going to do the new file system, and whoever does the best job will get paid, and the rest of you will get fired.
You know, IBM.
That's
used
the Intel way.
That used to be the policy at IBM. They used to always put two parallel groups working on a project together.
It works.
The winner would get the one.
The real issue is how do you manage? How do you maintain innovation and personal control of the group when you get to be too big a company? How do you stay agile when you're as big as Microsoft?
Spin it off into a subsidiary.
Yeah, you become a dinosaur. IBM's the king of this, aren't they? Look what happened to them. They used to be dominant.
Yeah, well, IBM, I don't even know if they're really a company anymore. They seem to be just, except for their chip business, they seem to have outsourced everything. Yeah, so here's an interesting story that came up. Well, here's an interesting story that came up in the news to change the topic a little bit. This AMD subpoenaed Microsoft in the antitrust case against Intel. I personally thought was quite amusing.
And
the reason I thought it was funny is because Microsoft's always kind of been in bed. This has got to come out in the court, but Microsoft's always been in bed with AMD.
You've said this before that Gates owned AMD stock and Microsoft preferred AMD to Intel.
And remember they had that one product, there was some Windows-only thing that AMD was making for them. I can't remember this, but some years ago.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
So you could have a lot of fun by loading up your email with all kinds of negative stuff on the other company, and you know who's gonna be able to disclose that? It's like, hey, wait a minute, we never even had this meeting.
I think people don't realize what you just said is true. I think people assume that it's Windows, Microsoft, and Intel are in bed together. The AMD
I think it's because it's been so long. It's people, you know.
Well, everybody in the valley, everybody in the valley knows for a fact that Microsoft and Intel have not gotten along for the longest time.
Oh yeah, they hate each other. So, why don't you summarize what this lawsuit's about, John? You seem to be following it most closely.
Yeah, essentially, this is a antitrust. This is a real whopper, too. This is an antitrust case, which is something of a, you know, it may or may not actually result in large penalties against Intel, but and it's about basically illegal practices or bad practices or monopolistic practices or something.
Well, they're asserting that Intel uses its monopoly to leverage.
Right, and of course, everybody, then they do.
Of course they do.
Or they did. We don't know what's going on now.
It's pretty much the same charge that was brought against Microsoft, isn't it?
Right. Only
and it's also the same charge that was brought against Intel in Japan, wasn't it, where AMD actually came out trumps in that
it's
one.
It's all part of the same case. But yeah. what it really amounts to me, I mean, AMD is doing very well with this situation for publicity, if nothing else. But it says to me that this is really, or what I kind of think of it as, is a make good, because Intel all those years was suing AMD to death.
Right.
Every time they turned around, they were getting sued over something or other, and it was a hassle. And I think this is like, you know, this is payback. Yep.
So you think totally. Microsoft will actually have a lot of anti-Intel documents in this?
Oh, I absolutely.
Be discovered in this?
There's no doubt in my mind.
I love it.
A convenient leak or two.
You know,
there's going to be stuff coming out of Microsoft that's going to be just, it's going to be all over the news. You watch.
We may not have Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston in the tech sector, but we do have AMD, Intel, and Microsoft. Will, what's the current, one of the things BitTech does is a lot of testing of hardware. What is the current status of the AMD Intel chips? For a while, AMD was really kicking Intel's butt. Is it still the case, or have the new cores really improved Intel's?
Yeah, no, it's mostly still the case, especially on the desktop. In the notebook sector, you probably can't buy anything better than the Intel Core Duo chip.
And that's been true for a while, yeah.
That's pretty quick.
With the Pentium M.
But the new FX60 stuff. But interestingly, I don't know if you saw it, there was some testing on Monantech this week of the new AMD platform AM2,
mm-hmm.
which is...
that's their dual core, right?
No, it's like the sort of next generation platform. So AMD for the longest time has had...
The X2.
AMD's had dual core for a while.
Right.
Yeah, and it's also had its memory controller integrated onto the chip. So if they want to move to DDR2, they've got to basically respin the whole platform.
Oh, wow.
So the AM2 is all about moving to DDR2, finally.
Is it going to still be x86 based? Or
yeah, absolutely. So it's basically... So this has kind of been the slightly disappointing thing, was that... I think a lot of people expected big things from AM2 and expected some major performance increases from moving to DDR2 and a new socket. And the testing on Arantex this week seems to suggest that there's not really going to be much of a performance increase at all. So in fact, when it comes to doing anything to take on Intel in the next 6 months, Intel's got, you know, Conroe and its new platform that looks very spangly. AMD looks like it might be kind of a bit slow.
Right now, if you were buying today, what would be the best consumer chip out there?
Oh, you'd buy anything by AMD.
So this FX...
The X2 is sort of like the mainstream chip.
Right.
The FX60 is, if you've got like hundreds of bucks, just a smackdown on a very, very fast chip.
That's what I'm sitting in front of right now. It doesn't seem that much faster.
Oh, you're a very lucky man.
It doesn't seem that much faster, I'll be honest.
Seems faster to me. I've got one of those myself.
Well, you have an SLI set up.
Yeah, and also two monitors, and it's pretty smooth.
And you know what he
guys,
does?
We can get into all sorts of
He plays
of,
solitaire. He's not playing guys, Half-Life 2. No. He's got Tetris up there. It's ridiculous.
Maybe he's just waiting for...
WordStar.
So do you have dual cards, John, or is it just SLI? I mean, do you actually
I have dual cards. Now I have two systems, actually, with dual SLIs in them.
So does that make a quad SLI?
No. I mean, I have another machine.
I'm just teasing you.
Good, I guess.
So they're all NVIDIA video cards?
Yeah, the good ones.
Is it really fast?
I think so. I mean, it looks fast to me. I mean, the thing is that, you know, there's the entropy. I mean, these machines are new enough that I have, you know, there's an entropy issue still
right.
with Windows.
All new Windows installs are fast. As soon as, you know,
all the machines are fast when they're new.
I used Boot Camp last week to install Windows on my Mac. Boy, it seems fast. But that's because there's nothing else, you know, there's no crap on.
You never put anything
right,
on.
Right, and there's no drivers that are working.
No, actually, no. The boot camp drivers, they all work. They're
no,
all
no, I know. But if you go to the device manager and start looking down the list, there's a whole bunch of things that it sees that it decides not to deal with.
Oh, really? Oh, I haven't looked at that. I should have.
Yeah, go look. It's a million yellow question marks. It's the funniest thing you've ever seen.
What was quite interesting that I saw a couple of weeks ago was that it was a laptop with NVIDIA SLI in it, which had two graphics cards in the laptop. And not only that, it's got a 19-inch screen.
Must have like 5 minutes battery life. I mean, how long?
Yeah, it's pretty appalling. And also, you really don't want to put it on your lap.
No.
And you go, you can use it as a room heater.
It's probably one of those perfect LAN party machines. Hey, look, I can
Well, it is.
It
you can as long as you've only got to carry it to the car and back, then it's kind of doable. But if you actually want to like carry it anywhere of any distance, then you're probably going to do yourself some major spinal injuries.
How long, John, before we're back to the compact computer-sized portables and we're schlepping those around?
I think we kind of still are.
Well, yeah.
I think you're at that point for the game guys, the LAN party guys. They need to lug around something fairly big, and they usually develop something that's pretty much like an old compact, except for the fact it's got an extra screen.
Take a shuttle.
That's what I've got, the shuttle, and it goes in a little case, and then the LCD goes in a case.
I've seen guys carry that around. It's kind of
not that anybody's
a compact-esque.
Nobody's invited me to LAN parties, but that's.
Oh.
I got the equipment.
But what do you make of this?
Hey, everybody out there, this is an announcement. Please invite Leo to a LAN party. He'll be glad to go.
No, I don't have to anymore because my entire life now is on Second Life. After I signed up last week, now man, people are giving me stuff. You know, there's a lot.
Are you spending all your time?
People are giving you stuff in the game. They're giving you things like money.
Yeah, money, giant hats, weird stuff.
Are you? Anyone can you?
Somebody gave me
some way that you can profit from this?
Probably, I could sell them. Prune face spatula. If you want to give me stuff, you know. Though I'm kind of shocked. There's a lot of sex in there.
There's a lot of sex in Second Life. Have you read all the columns recently? There was some stuff on Slate about it.
You can buy nude suits, you know. You can actually, you can buy, you know, because you can buy clothes,
like a bald cap?
You can buy clothes, but if you want to buy clothes that look like you're naked, you can. And they're very graphic. They're very realistic.
Why don't you just go naked? This doesn't make any sense.
Because there is no naked. So this is how you go naked, is you put on naked clothes. it's a little confusing.
So we talked about this on Cranky Geeks last week.
There's
by the
prostitutes
way.
In there. There's
prostitutes is what we talked about. What you know? This is Mitch Kapoor's company. You know?
No, this is Mitch Kapoor.
Yeah.
You're kidding. I didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure it is. If you look into it, I think you're going to find he's like the chairman or something.
Oh, interesting.
So for the uninitiated, Mitch Kapoor is
Lotus 1-2-3.
Mitch Kapoor is the guy who founded the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and now I think we know why.
But he made all his money off of Lotus.
Yeah.
And then took that money, founded EFF, and now is using his newfound freedom to dress naked. By the way,
that was his goal all along.
I owe a retraction. Who's squeaking something? Is that you, John? Is that your new thing? You have a little squeak toy in there? pretty soon he's going to have a bell. He's going to have a buzzer. It's going to be like
a
morning show.
We don't totally need a buzzer.
I have to apologize to the folks at There, because last week I said that There was, you know, moribund. And in fact, apparently it's still thriving. I guess what happened is that the company spun off. One of its original investors is running it now. And that the other side of the team went on to work for the military, or to develop stuff for the military. They're doing simulations for the military.
What did you say last week?
I think Donald Rumsfeld wants a nude suit. And he's commissioned. I think maybe he could hide more easily.
I think maybe he's a camouflage suit.
It's a camo suit.
Hide from the press.
We're gonna build an undisclosed location for Dick Cheney in There. No, I said that There was not out of business, because I thought I had heard somebody had told me that they had kind of closed their doors. But no, they're actually larger than Second Life. But what they don't do is sex. They prevent sex in There.
Ah. Well, there's quite an interesting thing about which alleged that the guys at Second Life are now starting to get a bit like antsy about all the publicity for the sex in the game, because it's a great currency, and it's one of the major, as with all worlds, it's about the sex sells everything, and sex drives industry. And they're saying that as long as it was kind of kept underground and they could kind of let it go on, a bit of plausible deniability, but now it's all coming out in the open, they're worried that the whole, like, you know, the Grand Theft Auto lobby of concerned parents or whatever, is going to jump on Second Life and force them to do something about it, and they kind of don't want to. I mean, that was the proposed theory.
Well, that's what MySpace is going to do. MySpace this week announced that they're hiring a child protection officer or something of the sort. Did you see that story? I don't know.
A single person?
Yeah, he's let me see if I can find the story, because I can't remember.
Well, a single person to police all of MySpace seems like a little bit crazy.
Let me clarify something with Kapoor here.
Okay.
Because I know he'll be writing it, so we don't have this right. It says here in his own bio online, it says, Mitch, so this is where I got confused.
He actually plays MySpace.
I'm sure of that. He's also chairman of the board of Linden Research, founded by
MySpace.
Philip Rosedale, former CTO of Real Networks, the creator of Second Life, the leading online virtual world. The way this is written so poorly is you can't tell if the reference is to Rosedale or to Mitch, as insofar as the creator of Second Life.
If Mitch is the chairman of Linden, he's the chairman of the board of Second Life. Linden Labs built, and so he can't write us about anything. But Mitch, if you want to come on the show.
You know, he refuses to do anything unless it's got something to do with him.
Really?
Well, I mean, he didn't want to come on Cranky Geeks, and we wanted to talk about the Second Life thing.
Oh, interesting. Really? Yeah.
It's kind of a secretary. In fact, he doesn't even respond. His secretary responds. He's like too above it all.
So what's happened with MySpace is there have been a slew, and this will probably happen with Second Life too, a slew of bad press. People saying, you know, pederasts have been arrested soliciting people in MySpace. A teacher was arrested, a teacher at a middle school, for regularly engaging in late night and early morning exchanges with students through the MySpace website. So they arrested this
guy. What kind of exchanges were these?
Well, they're not very
specific.
I think
if they were late night, you can probably guess.
So they've hired an online safety officer. They're going to begin posting ads to educate young people. I think you hit the nail on the head, John, when you said people get very nervous when this kind of stuff starts to gain attention. That could kill you, right?
Or make your business triple.
Well, I think we've helped Second Life quite a bit.
Because everyone knows you're on it now. They can't, since you never answer your email, they figure they'll find you in Second Life and talk to you.
But I'm not wearing a nude suit. I'm wearing a Speedo. I have some limits.
Run my eyes.
But there was an interesting one. There was a UK-based company which set up basically an alternative to MySpace, which was sort of endorsed by parents and teachers groups as like a safe place.
And, of course, no kid would be dead there.
Yeah, don't come to MySpace. Come to somewhere where we're being like watched, and you know, it's just no good.
I let my kids on MySpace because every kid needs a place to go where it's their own place, you know.
But then in sort of
and
going alongside
on them.
That,
you
well, did you see that Sprint launched this cell phone tracking service this week about using this GPS triangulation for only $10 a month? You can know where your kid is at all times, as long as they've got their cell phone on.
I actually bought a phone that would do that for my son from Verizon. Same thing. And you go on the website and you can see where they are. And we mentioned this. Disney's doing it last week. This is clearly
old is your son, Leo?
He's 11.
And you need to track him? And you need to track him?
Yeah, you know
what?
Where
is he going to be going? Is he hanging out at the bar?
No, but he goes into town. I don't know where he is.
He goes into town on like
Goes into what town? Sebastopol?
Petaluma. It's not a big town.
Oh, Petaluma. And he goes to buy chickens, I take it. That's a very California joke nobody out there will get.
he goes to the candy store, and I have to keep an eye on him.
Does he take a bus?
That candy is a killer.
No, he doesn't. He can walk into town. So I just think it's a good thing. All right. Anyway, but I don't let him on MySpace, and he's not technically supposed to be on MySpace. That's probably part of the issue. You know, you're supposed to be 13 or older to be on MySpace, and obviously, there's a lot of kids saying they're 13.
Well, that's now a bootable offense, isn't it? One of the new changes, changed terms and conditions, is that if you pretend to be older than you are or younger than you are, that's a kickable offense. Although, how anybody's going to know?
What if you say you're 36 when in reality you're like 45? Is that still considered?
No. As long as
that's probably dangerous. There's a lot of vulnerable 35-year-olds out there.
As long as you're not working for the Department of Homeland Security, you can do that. That's okay. That's a little.
Yeah, I think there's eventually there's going to be some cases where a lot of this is just a goof, both by the kids and some of these.
I'm sure
maybe that middle school teacher had some sort of issues, but a lot of people. I remember my son was when he was 14. He used to go online in these chat rooms and pretend he was 30, and he'd have all these women at Twitter.
Right, right.
They'd yuck it up afterwards, and that'd be the end of it. I mean, you know, he's not going to meet anybody.
Have I told this?
The put-on aspect is like being. I think the fantasy aspect is largely ignored in all this, and a lot of people go on and pretend they're girls, or women pretend they're men, and guys pretend football players. They're not.
Absolutely, it's one of the reasons that any sex and second life makes me nervous because you don't really know. I'm not that I would do this, by the way.
Well, it's supposed to be sex verified. That's what they say.
There are some services that will, some people that will absolutely verify that.
Because you don't know who you're getting it on with.
I think what's really missing from the sex verification is I said there has to be weight verification. That's more important.
Oh, she's fat. No, that's the beauty of it. I think really, I mean, I'm not going to use something like this, but if you are an unattractive person who has a hard time meeting people, it really can become
Could you put this more diplomatically, Leo? It could become
your second life, and I think that's not a bad thing.
It could be your primary life because obviously the real world is just too hard to get along with.
Right, right.
When the real world spurns you.
All right.
I don't know. I think it's rougher. I think that the online world's rougher than the real world. People aren't as rude in the real world as they are online.
True.
Because
that's
they can see how big you are
online, is there?
I am getting so, to be honest with you, so sick of the lack of any kind of etiquette online. I mean, the kinds of nasty comments, even in our own chat rooms and message boards and our own comments on twit.tv, people are just rude.
Oh, it's unbelievable. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that I've made the Dvorak blog moderated from the beginning, and people would criticize me for censoring. It's not censoring. It's trying to make the thing so it's pleasant. And I noticed that Robert Scoble last week announced that he has to do that.
Yeah,
now
you have to. If you want to have, you know, it used to be, remember The Well? I mean, The Well used to be a great place.
And I think it's mainly just because of, I mean, at that time, the type of people that could get on The Well.
Exactly. It was very. But now everybody's online, and I don't think you can have that kind of intelligent
conversation. The great unwashed masses.
It's like any world now, isn't it? I mean, the world is full of idiots.
Jerks.
And so it's inevitable that they're going to end up online now that all the world is online.
I have a firm belief that there's probably 70% of any given population on this planet I will never get along with.
But wouldn't it be great if you could do that in real life, if you could just, like, moderate people in real life? Like, someone's talking to you and you're thinking you're a bit of an idiot, and you could just, like, press the button and shut them up.
I think you see. You say that, John. That's just Roger. But John, you seem like
more of a
misanthrope than anybody in this group. Do you like people?
I kid.
You kid.
What?
You're such a kidder. Do you like people?
Do I like people?
Yes.
I love people.
He loves his ducky. We know that much.
I like people. Of course, I like people. I'm a people person.
I know you are, John. AOL ran into a buzzsaw this week. They, as you know, there have been a lot of heat over AOL's plan to use this Good Mail email certification system. There's a whole petition online called DearAOL.com where people are saying, don't use this. You know, this is going to be the beginning of paid email, and it's going to limit access on the net. Well, apparently on Wednesday, America Online began blocking email that contained the address DearAOL.com. CNET verified it, trying to send an email to an account, and it bounced. It bounced. It said,
I don't, you know.
You don't think this happened?
I think it happened, but you know what? To me, it's like, who cares? Because the fact of the matter is they're obviously getting spammed, which is what it amounted to. And what new message have they heard from another 100,000 people saying that this idea sucks?
Right.
I'm sure they have killed it. I would do the same thing. It makes their life easier.
Well, here's the question, and I kind of with you. I don't, you know. First of all, it stopped after 24 hours. I think it's very likely it was an automatic filter, I mean, I can't imagine some executive at Time Warner saying, you know, we've really got to stop these emails about the Dear AOL site.
I mean, I can.
Really? And you think they'd actually do it? I think
I'd
that's such a risky thing to do. But it'd be caught
I'd
right away.
It.
You would?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Because there's no point in an email system where it can be censored. I mean, that's...
But your stuff is censored constantly. I mean, spam is censored. You block IPs. There's not an ISP in the world that doesn't have IPs blocked all over the place.
That's true.
I mean, black holes are terrible.
The
idealism about email has been over for 5 years at least.
So is email dead?
No,
as,
it's
like,
not
as a communication
dead.
Medium? I mean, is it no? Well, certainly less useful.
No, it's not less useful. I don't find it less useful.
Well, if you
it's
can't,
less useful.
I think
for
maybe
spammers.
It's less useful. It's less useful if you're the margins of acceptability, perhaps.
But wait
there's
a minute,
there's stuff that you could do before that you can't do now. If you're in that middle,
Leo, you never answer your email anyway, and you're complaining. This is amazing to me.
Yeah, but I read it. I mean, it's not. I'm not like. I think it's, there's a difference between censorship and spam filtering, isn't there?
No,
well, there is, because spam filtering is very much a kind of automatic process, right? And it's designed just, it's like a machine, and it just says...
It's designed to get rid of stuff that's unsolicited commercial email, not stuff
whereas
I don't feel comfortable with.
You know, really, it's just a point of view.
Human interaction.
I mean...
it's not a point of view. It's a very clear demarcation. It's just because it's politically uncomfortable for me, it doesn't mean I want it to be censored. But if it's spam, if it's unsolicited commercial email, that's different. That's mass emails. I mean, I think AOL could say that, well, there was a mass email coming in saying sign up on DearAOL.com.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm saying as an executive in this situation, if I was making that decision, I would have some bogus announcement to make, too. I'd say, oh, well, we expected this. You know, I would have called it. I would have said, hey, look, you have to kill this. You know, we're going to just kill this whole, anything that comes in like this gets killed. But what we're going to say publicly is that, well, blah, 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 and you have some phony baloney excuse. Yeah, that they could have done that.
Do you know what their public excuse was?
No, but I'm sure it was something similar to what I said.
No,
blah,
it's
blah,
even,
blah,
it's,
blah, blah.
It's goofier.
It's
according,
goofier.
According to AOL spokesman Nicholas Graham, the issue arose because of a software glitch. Always a good... Always
that's
a,
not a glitch.
Always
oh,
a
that's
good.
Lame.
Wait a minute.
Come
gets,
on. It's creative.
It gets lamer. That,
this
quote,
is, that's really
affected dozens of web links and messages, including DearAOL.com, but many others. We discovered the issue early this morning, and our postmaster and mail operations team started working to identify this software glitch, and now that mail is getting through.
Show some backbone, buddy.
So presumably the DearAOL stuff can get through now.
Yeah.
So they're happy.
See, I believe them, because I think it's too. It would be too... Well, as it ended up being, it's politically difficult to do that kind of thing. It's very dangerous. It's not worth it. Who cares if some, you know, people are sending emails saying, oh, yeah, well, this is bad, sign this petition. Who cares?
Leo, I think that political danger is long since over. I think you're living back in the 90s.
There is no political danger?
I don't think
Nobody
so.
Nobody cares?
Anymore.
The only people who are talking about this are us?
You got it. And the 300,000 listeners.
I think you're right. I think you're right. I don't think I
But on cares. The on the same topic, did you see this the story, Republicans defeat net neutrality bill?
Yes, I did.
By an 8-23 margin. And that looked pretty scary.
Do we have any was there one Democrat that voted, or I mean why are the Republicans getting blamed for this?
Well, it's a Democratic amendment, that's why.
But it was
and all the Republicans
it was
voted
Republican
against it basically.
House.
Yeah. So yeah. It was a proposal that would have levied extensive regulations on broadband providers to prevent them from offering, you know, these premium high-speed video services to their affiliates. I mean, it's what we've been talking about before with this tiered internet.
Yeah,
Verizon
right.
wants it. A lot of companies want it where, you know, if you pay, you know, if you're paid or you're somehow paying money, you would have special access or you'd be able to get special services on there. And it's the concomitant, it's the other side of what they're doing, which is bandwidth shaping, where they're turning off BitTorrent. So unless you pay, you won't be able to get these kinds of video services.
Well, what was even more interesting was that, like, Amazon and eBay and Google and Microsoft and Yahoo all put in favor of the amendment, saying, you know, net neutrality is a good thing. And they just went completely against that. It was like, well, who are you guys anyway?
Well, that's because they're not putting as much money into the pot as Verizon.
They're not putting it into the right pot,
I suppose.
Yeah.
You know, we did a special tweet in the middle of the week, interviewed Jake Fisher, who's the new executive director of IPAC, which is the a new political action committee focused on, I love this idea, finding, targeting, and getting rid of these members of Congress who are not, you know, representing us well. In terms of intellectual property, things like, you know, the Induce Act that Orrin Hatch tried to introduce, things like that. In fact, Orrin Hatch is one of their targeted members.
Orrin Hatch is a target for a lot of these guys, and they'll never get rid of this guy. He's like so entrenched in Utah.
Five times they've tried and five times failed. You're right.
If you're going to do one of these political action committees, you have to target weak people and to get your, you know, get to the point where you can scare the stronger ones.
Right.
To target Orrin Hatch is like the first mistake that you can make.
You think he's undefeatable?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Unless you can catch him
less,
Unless you can catch them online in Second Life or MySpace, you know, with some teenager, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah, no, you may be right. I mean, that's the problem, is that it's the local constituencies who elect these guys, and they love them.
You have to know how to pick your fights and, you know who you can get away with and not
this
necessarily.
This is particularly a U.S. issue, Will. I mean, what from the international point of view, do people look from the U.K. to what's going on in the U.S. as a bellwether, or is it just not relevant?
Well, I think so, because there's still a lot of feeling that, you know, the Americans control the net to some degree. And so what goes on over there has a sort of a ripple effect elsewhere. To some degree, we've been kind of lucky. I mean, you guys have seen a lot of lawsuits from, you know, the record industry over there. And that's not really something that we've seen repeated over here. But I think there's definitely, you know, people in England perhaps take even more interest in American politics with regards to the net, maybe even so than some Americans.
Well, and it's also true that if the Consumer Electronics Association decides to, you know, put a broadcast flag in every digital device, that's going to impact everybody worldwide, not just in
the
US.
I think maybe the major issue is that we'll no longer be able to torrent 24 every week, and that will make things really difficult for us Brits.
Tell you, torrent 24, we'll torrent Battlestar Galactica. It all works out.
Yeah. Although, did you see that Fox signed this week to make its shows available the day after broadcast airing?
They'll be free, right? Because they're going to put commercials
in them. They'll be free. But what I want to know is, are they going to restrict it by, you know, geographical IP? Because at the moment, there is a major, you know, I know a lot of people in the UK that there's like a little mini industry in getting the latest episodes out before they air over here, you know. And if they're just available for free,
quit staggering releases for shows.
It's rubbish. It's just retarded. It's so bad. And it's the same for films. It's just completely stupid.
It's a distribution cost. That's the only reason that they do it that way. I mean, eventually this will go away with digital distribution, but with hard distribution where you actually have to take a film physically and take it to a theater, they can't afford to make that many prints. They would break the budget, and then they can't, like, you know, let the DVD show up in France like months before the film actually can get over there. I mean, I'm kind of sympathetic to this situation. I agree that they should just let everything go all at the same time, but they just can't physically do it, at least not with the technology as it currently exists.
But there's been technology.
You can with television, though.
With television is another story. I'm talking about somebody mentioned movies, and that's where the real problem
is. But they do the same thing
with
TV shows.
TV shows, there's no excuse for it.
Well, in fact, I think, amazingly enough, a Fox executive or somebody at Fox has figured that out and said, we're losing revenue here. They're downloading it anyway. Let's put out high quality. Yeah. We'll see how high quality, but let's put out high quality versions. Same day.
It'll be HD.
You know what? They just need to be high quality enough for people to say, hey, I like the show enough. Why don't I buy the box set on DVD?
No, but you know what will happen? As long as there is a...
Roger's right.
No, because there's a commercial-free HD version coming out the same day over Torrent. Well, wouldn't you just get that?
No, not my wife.
Well, the enthusiasts are going to buy the box set anyway.
I think they'll sell more box sets. Yeah. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Well, the easier it is to get at the content, the more people will be interested, the more that they will sell. And I think for most people, as you say, John, you know, your wife is never going to go and start torrenting stuff, but if she can just go and grab it off fox.com or whatever, that's probably pretty simple and will get you hooked on a series that otherwise you might not be hooked on. It's the same thing for IPTV. You know, going and grabbing a video podcast from iTunes is so simple. You'll try out loads of stuff just to see what you like.
It saved the office.
You might not spend weeks, you know, going through every corner of the BitTorrent underground to try and find stuff that you really fancy. Making this stuff accessible is you know, crucial is making it good.
One show I guarantee they're not downloading in the UK is the American version of The Office.
Oh, no. See, that's actually got quite a...
Really?
Are there parties that do comparisons?
It's a sick show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is it good?
It's pretty good.
Oh, I have to watch it, because I just was a fan of the Ricky Gervais version.
Oh, no, you have to... You know, the problem with The Office, I don't particularly like the show, but I do watch it, and the reason I don't like it is because it really starts to make you itch. It's a little too...
It's hard. It's too
crazy
to
watch. I mean, you watch this, and it's just like these people... It's like watching an insane asylum. That's close to being believable.
Well, that was what was
but
great
John,
about
have you
the...
seen the English version?
Oh, so good.
Yeah, I did.
Because the English version is even closer to the
book. Oh, it's painful.
It's hard.
Do you remember that show that was done up in Canada called The Newsroom or something like that, where you had this evil guy?
Yeah.
That was a great show.
They showed it on and off on PBS.
Yeah, it was a botch. There's a lot of good stuff in Canada that we do not get here.
Like Call for Help.
Well, yeah, Call for
but
Help.
But we did get Michael J. Fox and Alex Trebek.
And let's not forget Anne Murray.
And William Shatner, if you're going to bring up all of everybody.
Well, yeah, and Peter his career is still going on Boston Legal.
This is starting to sound like an Adam Sandler routine in some twisted way. Did you see this one? This is probably, to me, the hottest button story of the week. AT&T engineer says the NSA has been building secret rooms in AT&T facilities. This engineer says, quote, in 2002... when I was working at an AT&T office in San Francisco, the site manager told me to expect a visit from a National Security Agency agent who was to interview a management-level technician for a special job. On January 2003, I, along with others, toured the AT&T central office on Folsom. There, I saw a new room being built adjacent to the 4ESS switch room where the public phone calls are routed. The person whom the NSA interviewed for the secret job was the person working to install equipment. The NSA wiretapping American citizens with the help of AT&T.
Is this actually, I mean, maybe this is just real UK ignorance, but I always figured that the Americans monitored everything about everything anyway.
Well, we always thought the Brits monitored like, everything. That's isn't that what Exodus?
Not Carnival.
Echelon.
Echelon.
Yeah, but your Secret Service has admitted that they use Echelon.
You know the way that supposedly they get around a lot of the legal issues about spying on their own citizens was, especially with Echelon, was they made a deal. All right, so I'm not sure in the UK if it's illegal for the government or if there are a lot of issues with, you know, wiretapping citizens without their prior consent. But in the U.S., it basically went, all right, since we can't do our own citizens, why don't you look at our stuff and we'll look at your stuff? And therefore, we're not technically looking at our citizens.
Oh, yeah, and then we'll exchange the analysis. Now, this is the NSA in there. According to this guy, he's a retired AT&T engineer. He says, according to them, they installed a NARIS STA-6400 traffic analyzer into which all AT&T internet and phone traffic was routed. He says he himself installed the splitter. So, I mean, this is a little scary, if you ask me. And this is 3 years ago. They've been doing it for 3 years. What do you think, John?
I can't imagine the stuff they've collected. You know, I've always assumed that people are listening. I'm kind of like you know, the British public. I always assume that everyone in this country is listening in on everybody else. And you know, I just it's just a sad, sick situation. But that's the only way you can look at
boy,
it.
I mean, I feel the same way. But boy, are we being fatalistic? We're just kind of saying, yeah. I guess that's the way it is.
Well, it's easy to be fatalistic when there's stories like this floating around. I mean, a story like this is like so above anything we have any control over. And, you know, then it's not going to end. I don't know what they've managed to get out of this. I mean, it's a needle in a haystack still. But the problem is, you know, there's so many laws in this country anyway, and the whole legal system set up so they can just throw a million of if you're arrested for something, they can pile on all kinds of things, and then they make you bargain your way out of it, so they don't even have to go to court. Right. I mean, the whole system is essentially designed very much like the Soviet system was, where you could not really walk down the street without breaking the law somehow. And so, if they felt like, you know, making you a target, you're in jail. There's nothing you can do about it.
That's scary.
Well, that's kind of the 1984 scenario.
Isn't it? Big Brother is clearly watching.
But in the UK, it's kind of been known that, you know, you say the word like, you know, bomb on the telephone, and somebody's going to be flagging it somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of like a given, I think, over here.
You know, that Soviet system's always amused me because when I went to Moscow once some years ago, just before the fall of communism, it was exemplified at the airport because at the time it was illegal to take any rubles outside of the country. It was just completely illegal. And there was an embarkation line, which is a yellow line that was at the airport where you were technically out of the country and then you were technically in the country when you crossed the line. All the carts that you move your luggage on were all out of the country, and they all required a ruble or two to get them in a little machine. So you had to even get into the country with one of these carts, you had to break the law.
That's outrageous.
They got you.
Guys, I think we've possibly missed Google Calendar.
Oh, well, you haven't talked about it yet. I played with it a little bit. What do you think? Have you tried it, Will?
I haven't tried with it a great deal. It just seemed like another.
There's so many out
in
there.
The online yeah. app. On the one hand, it was just like, well, Google Calendar, big deal. There's so many online calendars out there. On the other hand, it's like, well, once you've got calendar and email and IM and address book, you're starting to look a lot like Outlook.
I'm waiting for that integration, though. It's not there yet. I mean, we're starting.
It'll surely
to get
come,
there.
Though, won't it?
Well, will it? I don't know. I mean, right now, it's just another calendar. It doesn't look any better or worse than anything else. It's got some Ajax. It's got some, you know, artificial intelligence, so you can type, you know, make an appointment for Tuesday. But I don't find it that useful. Has anybody else said? I mean, I've got a calendar on. I imported everything into it.
Leo, you're a joiner. You would have done it immediately.
I join everything I can.
You do.
And I'm wearing, and right now, I'm wearing my naked outfit.
I haven't played with it. I mean,
where does this put?
You know, we mentioned Mitch Kapor earlier. Where does this put him in this Chandler project?
We haven't heard much of that lately, have we?
Well, it's on his website. He's still talking about it, but it's like this thing. It seems to me that it's already so far passed over. That I mean, these calendars. What's so special? I mean, calendars. I mean, I've used the calendar. I still use the Palm desktop calendar. What do I need these? What is these
well,
other calendars
you,
do?
Well, because you're a loner, John. I mean, the advantage of these is it's groupware, and there's some of the few applications where it really does benefit being online because other people can see it. You can subscribe to other people's calendars. You can share appointments. I mean, and when you have an invitation sent to you via Gmail, it can automatically calendar it. I mean, there are reasons for it, but it's because you're all alone.
All right, what's the name of the mass murderer? Did you always call the mass murderer? He's a loner.
Troubled
he kept
loner.
To himself.
He was
kept to himself, that guy.
A quiet loner.
Seemed like a nice guy.
Never have anybody on his IM lists.
Spend
all the time on MySpace.
My problem is it's no better than a desktop calendar. I mean, it's like iCal, basically. And I don't, you know, I don't, I, like you, am a troubled loner, John, so I don't see it.
You know, the troubled loner thing isn't really the thing. It's the laziness thing about being in my situation. Maybe you're the troubled loner, or maybe I am, but I think it's, I get phone calls, say, hey, we got to have a lunch, blah, 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 and I say, okay, and I write it down on an envelope.
Right.
You know, because I'm down in the kitchen usually, and I write this thing down. I figure I'm going to put it in the calendar. I never do it. And so I never use these calendars. So everything's just a bunch of notes and little post-it notes. I'm a mess.
You're a mess. You know,
it's a mess. I just don't take meetings.
I actually have a BlackBerry where I will email the appointment or the commitment or the to-do to a central web server, which I can then get as an RSS feed, which will import it into my iCal. So it is possible to automate this. And since I've been doing that, it's been really
with a lot of very expensive equipment.
So that's talking about...
That's quite a way just to get an appointment into your calendar.
It works.
Yeah, I think the post-it note works just as well.
and I miss just as many appointments, so I don't know. This is kind of, to me, a sad story. It's somebody we know, John, Robin Raskin. Who is kind of caught in not a very good situation. We know a number of people, actually, who do these satellite media tours and VNRs, video news releases. I've never agreed to do them for this reason. You don't do those, do you, John?
No, I don't. I mean, I probably would if the price was right, but
they don't offer you enough.
They take a lot of money.
And Roger Chang keeps appearing on a Google ad, but not from his own design.
Yeah, no, that just pisses me off.
Can you explain that before we talk about Robin?
You don't know about that? You've seen
it. No,
that.
I don't know about it.
It's actually, you know, it's funny because I made a page, it's a private page for the Twits so that we can, you know, so when I invite somebody to be in Twit, they can go to this site and read all the details. And if you go to that page, leoville.com/twit, right at the top, a Google ad, Tech TV recommends Roger Chang. Quote, I started using it 2 days ago, and I can't stop using it.
They've been something I used like four or 5 years ago.
And I
have stopped, just so everyone knows.
He stopped using it the day after the show.
The month, yeah, the month after that. It was like, I'm done.
You see more. Anyway, that the irony is if you put anybody's name, I guess because Roger Chang's name's in there or something, it just shows up. So anyway, no, let me tell you a little bit about what happened to Robin and get your reaction. So this is a video news release that she made for a company called DS Simon Productions. The release was funded by, and this is what happens with these VNRs, a company will put together what looks like a news story. In this case, it was Panasonic, Namco, and TechnoSource. And it was kind of a, she bills herself as the internet mom, and it was the best and worst high-tech gifts for children. What were the worst high-tech gifts? The Apple iPod and the Gizmondo. Why? Because the people who paid for the video release have competing products. What were the best? Well, it turns out, three products made by the companies that paid for them. The Oxyride battery.
Wow, you know, this is a shock that something would happen in this day and age.
well, here's what's shocking. I mean, you know, Robin got well paid to do it.
Do we know that? I can find out.
She did. I guarantee you. These satellite media, I mean, I've been offered these.
What do they offer you? Because no one's ever offers me anything.
Oh, it's thousands of dollars. I can't remember. It's like five
is
or six thousand.
Is it 5,000, 10,000?
It's between 5 and 10.
Yeah, well.
It's good money. You spend a day doing it. But what really is appalling, of course, is all these local news stations that run these as if she's their reporter and without any comment about the fact that it's paid for by a company and that her recommendations are clearly slanted because of who's paying for it. I mean, you don't say the iPod is a bad choice for kids. Unless
well, you know, this
you
is
to.
A yeah. There's an ethical issue here. I mean, it seems to yeah. You're right. The problem is that I can see somebody doing these things if they had editorial control.
But you don't.
Yeah, if you don't have editorial control and you're going to portray yourself as someone who does,
she does a lot of these, and we know other people that do them. She did one that was sponsored by Motorola, Nokia, Texas Instruments, and Swiffer. I don't know how the Swiffer got in there.
So exactly, all this stuff would actually show up on a
yeah.
like you know news
yeah.
show.
And so these companies pay for you, right? And if it's that many companies, it's probably 10 grand. They pay for you. You do what looks like a news piece with a reporter, and it's plugging their products, and then they send it to every television station in the country, and a good number will run them, most of them without
any... But what they actually did, which was an extra, was they say she did a satellite media tour, which basically involves sitting and doing like remote interviews
yeah.
with the station anchors.
Yeah, Becky Worley
does
those.
So they run the news piece that's not the news piece, and then the station anchor says, wow, that news piece was awesome.
Right.
Let's get the direct report
right.
back from... And so she did those as a little tour as well.
Yep. And so you spend the whole day, and they do station after station after station. I've been offered them and I've consistently turned them down because I do think it's unethical.
Well, Becky does them, but she doesn't do them as the computer mom or some sort of an editorial type. She does them as a spokesmodel.
Right. And it's very clear, I think, when she does it that it's being paid for by somebody. So, you know, we know Robin. I love Robin. She's a wonderful person, but I think she's in, this is not a good...
Well, these things are touchy. If you have to do this, I mean, if you're going to do this stuff to supplement your income, it's pretty touchy. I mean, I give a lot of public speeches, and I do it sometimes for large corporations, and I have to be careful that I'm not like pandering to these guys.
It bugs me because people think I do it. People think you do it. People think that, well, everybody does it. It's another one of those. Well, everybody's doing it, and we don't.
Well, is it one of those things though? Because
no,
I mean, one of the main reasons that we get at least one of the things that people say to us when they read like BitTech in the UK is that they like it because they feel it's UK, and there's this some kind of like feeling that
it's
like,
only in America.
English, that American journalists are all like on the take, and they're all doing these
right.
press things.
Yeah, you know,
and the
irony
British journalists have somehow got this bastion of English.
The
you know,
irony to that is just the if anything, the opposite is true because the British, for example, of course, I argue on the side of the British for this. By the way, when it comes to doing junkets, which is a pet peeve of mine. I have like two things. I think that companies should pay for journalists to go on junkets. I don't think that the publisher should pay for it because it's why should my publisher pay to have me listen to some guy trying to brainwash me? I just think it's a complete waste of money. The British press and the European press in general, the publishers do not pay for these junkets. If you go to China to listen to somebody lecture you, the company that is going to be lecturing you pays for this trip and you can take it or leave it.
Now you do a lot of these, John.
I do, and I make a point of course, people say, well, you know, you say you're the exception and all this other stuff, because there are examples, because we're not used to doing it right, where somebody gets paid to go to some trip someplace to Japan, and they come back with all these fawning articles, whereas the Europeans, who have always been had their stuff picked up for them by these companies, they come back and slam the guys.
They don't expect. There's no expectation. There's no.
No, there's no expectation. But the Americans, you know, we've been set up to fail in this regard.
Well, that's why I don't do them, because you know me, John. I'm such a suck up that if somebody did pay my way, I would feel compelled to do that.
So well,
I like the fact that you understand yourself. But
isn't this the same complaint that they level against automotive journalists?
Oh yeah.
Like, well, It's like, well, you guys
right because they get to borrow a lot of cars and they feel obliged to say good things, and they or the stereo reviewers are pretty typical of this, and you have to read between the lines to actually read what the reviewer is trying to say. You know, this is pretty.
I mean,
common.
I think the English and the Europeans maybe are far more cynical people, and so the kind of just laying the smack down comes far easier, and also being far meaner about things maybe comes easier. I mean, Americans,
I agree with that 100%.
They're very nice people.
No, I agree with that 100%.
They don't like offending people.
But the problem with that is that's because they've been trained to be that way. Americans have been trained to, like, you know, be objective, and you're looking for all these kinds of ethical things, and you know, can't just be mean. I mean, it's almost like we're namby-pamby when it really comes down to it. And so we end up with a situation where we have, you know, we have this something like this. I mean, even this Robin Raskin thing, I mean, it shouldn't – if we were more cynical and we were – had a more European attitude about it, we would have, you know, but this wouldn't be a big deal because everyone would know it was like, you know, you don't
want to have an entire press corps just raised on cynicism. I mean, that's
yeah, you do.
Yeah, welcome to England.
There's a difference between being skeptical and being a cynic.
Well, you just want to. Well, I think it should be in. There's got to be a balance between skepticism and cynicism, but I don't want good news. I mean, I don't want the smiley news and all this cornball stuff.
You want the news where people are dead or dying or people suffering.
You know where this is really epidemic is Canada. The nicest people in the world. They don't want to say anything mean to anybody. In fact, the line is if a Canadian bumps into you, he'll apologize. I mean, or if you get bumped into by a Canadian, he'll apologize. I'm sorry. I don't know what happens.
Here we go.
Isn't that the joke that they used to say
somebody's
about the UK?
Yeah, if you bump into somebody on the street in Toronto, he'll apologize to you for bumping into him.
I'm going
to
try that out.
No, it's true. They do. They're very polite. What's the meanest? Who's the meanest country?
I have to say England.
You think England, the Brits are the meanest?
Well, I mean, I remember seeing an internal document from a big tech company which had basically press from it was a field guide, and it was press from around the world and how to deal with them. And the entry into England was, you know, English people are all cynical. They'll always look to twist your quotes. Never give anything without prior approval from PR. They will always fight for the underdog. And it was basically just going through, like, insulting all these British journalists that were known to be extremely cynical and extremely hard-nosed. And I think there's also the thing of, you know, the Brits aren't afraid to press a point or to press a question.
Right.
Where it might be awkward. Partly because we know, you know, we're probably going to be flying home afterwards. There's not really going to be any comeback.
I think it's very interesting. I really didn't know that about the Brits. Although the British press is known to be, especially yes. The tabloids are known to be.
Well, do you know?
Ruthless.
Do you know, like, online websites like The Inquirer?
Yeah. Oh, The Inquirer is ruthless. And gets
absolutely.
It wrong.
And
gets
that's
it wrong
run by a fantastic cynical old English guy.
Yeah, you could tell.
And he is he knows his stuff, but also he is the hardest person maybe to be interviewed by in
yeah,
tech.
I bet. TiVo won a big judgment on Thursday, $74 million, which pretty much saved the company. They were suing EchoStar, the dish folks, for basically DVR technology, the ability to watch one show while you tape another, to pause, to rewind, you know, functionality there'd be no TiVo without, and they won.
I have one of those units, by the way. I have the 928, which is a Dish Network clone.
Yeah, I like the 928, but it's not as good as a TiVo. Nothing's as good as a TiVo.
No, but it does have that 30
TiVo
second
owns
jump.
DVR.
Say again?
It has that 30 second.
TiVo
I'm sorry.
Owns DVR?
I should say again, Will.
I said, does this mean that TiVo now owns DVR as a concept?
Yes. Unless Dish Dish will appeal, and if they succeed in the appeal, then that might not. But basically,
but isn't that what
it means
Media Center does and all those other kind of
products? That's right. You would have to license basic DVR functionality, the multimedia time warping system. You would have to license it if you're going to include it, which means everybody will have to pay TiVo. It saves TiVo. I mean, TiVo loses this, they're gone.
You know, the question that's unanswered in these stories is, where does Replay TV fit into the scheme of things? They invented this stuff the same time.
That's a good question. I mean, why is it TiVo has the patent and not Replay? I don't know.
I guess TiVo was faster off the mark.
TiVo's lost in its what, it's about 6 years of operation. No, more than that, 9 years. They've lost $650 million, and they only broke even in one quarter on a per share basis. But now, you know, I mean, it's not like the money's going to save them, but the fact that they own the rights to the DVR is going to save them.
Maybe. You know, I it baffles me why that company couldn't make money. They invented a category that everybody loves.
I
mean, once you start using that stuff, you can't stop using it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't understand what happened that they couldn't make turn a profit with it. They had the thing cornered. I don't get it.
Well, what's bizarre to me is they still have it cornered. I mean, you can use, I mean, the 928 is great. And at least it records HD. And I've got a Comcast box. And they get the job done. But nowhere near the ease of use, the functionality of a TiVo. It really is still the class act. I mean, I guess people could say that for Replay. But, you know, Replay's kind of down and out. Why hasn't TiVo been more successful? I don't know. It's always a bad sign when a company, you know, when a company survives because of a lawsuit.
I won't be investing in it.
Yeah.
No, they're still a buyout candidate. There's about M&A in the future for them.
Their stock price went up, but it's still, I think it's still fairly depressed. Speaking of price.
But isn't Microsoft about, sorry, go.
Go ahead, finish.
I was going to say, isn't Microsoft about to kill all this stuff with like the next version of Media Center? They want to, you know, replace all your TiVos with this stuff? Integrate cable card functionality and
well, let me ask you.
You don't think that'll happen, John?
Which is worse, a blue screen of
death? They can't get anything to work. I don't know what the problem is.
It's a hard thing to do. I mean, I think the reason a TiVo works is an appliance. It's not it's a computer, but it's an appliance. You know,
it's dumb.
You can't. I mean,
it would be cool to have. You know, it'd be cool to have like a wireless connection to my television set that hooked to the computer upstairs that has my terabyte drive from Mac Store. Sitting there grinding away.
John, you can. All you have to do is buy a Mac Mini and use Front Row. iTunes, wireless, everywhere
but you can't
in the
use,
house.
What I'm saying, it would be cool. Then you're watching TV, and then somehow you click on a button, and it records the show upstairs.
Ah, now that would be nice, yes.
On the big, giant disc.
Frankly, it's the last piece of the puzzle that Apple has not put in. I guarantee you before the end of the year they will put in. And then they will be a credible media center, I think.
A little Mac Mini with the RF jack in the back.
All I need is a tuner. And already they've got the ability to stream that video anywhere in the house, the audio, the pictures. I mean, it's all built in. They're just missing that one last component. Of course, now they can't, right? Or they can, but they have to pay TiVo.
Damn much.
Yeah, it couldn't be that much.
We all say that.
It's more than $5, I'd be shocked.
Per unit?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can afford
that's kind of high, but it's $20 to the, you know, after all is said and done. But
got an antidote to the Forrester story last week that said that only, you know, that nobody was listening to podcasts. According to Arbitron, which is the ratings company that rates radio, 27 million people will be listening to podcasts. When do they say that'll happen? By soon. Any day now.
That's
just in America. 77% of Americans say they expect to listen to AM/FM radio as much as they do now, despite increasing advancements in technology. However, a quarter expect to listen to less radio. And for the people who have listened to podcasts, 27% expect to listen to less radio. And among satellite radios, 36. I don't know what to make of this, because Arbitron really is a shill for the radio industry.
Probably downplaying the horror.
The horror, exactly. It says 11% of all Americans have listened to podcasts. That's the 27 million figure. That means they've tried podcasts. So, I mean, I this is based on, you know, actual statistical numbers as opposed to the Forrester report, which is based on Charlene Lee's opinion. More than 1 in 10 Americans have listened to an audio podcast. Audio podcasting attracts an upper income audience. I think that's good. Not us. You know, we went to, when we go to advertisers, our audience, the demographics are not as wealthy as we'd like because of so many students listening. So if students, if you would mind listening but not telling anyone.
or getting second jobs. Students.
Yeah, get a job.
Can you
make some more money?
Hey, you kids, get to work.
Get a job. You're costing us.
Get off my lawn.
John and I are channeling each other now. So Ed Felton, who is the great Princeton professor who's really been in the forefront in cracking copy protection, has begun a new series saying that HDCP, which is the copy protection system for high-def television, is bogus, is crackable, is terrible, and will be cracked and easily and soon.
Wow.
Easily. Of course it will.
Yeah, of course it will.
What a shocker.
Yeah. So, but now, I mean, he hasn't said how yet, but you know, he says, lessons from the Sony CD-DRM episode is his paper, and a very interesting, highly recommended.
Can I tell you what I think?
What do you think?
When a guy comes out with an announcement like this out of the blue, it's already been cracked.
He knows. He knows. Yeah.
Well, it's one of those things. It follows the Cory Doctorow rule, which is, you know, he sort of coined back in a paper a while back, which is, once you provide someone, you know, any DRM has to provide not only the cryptography and the stuff you're encoding, but also the way to decode it.
Right.
Otherwise, like,
right,
you know, your disk or your video is completely useless. So once you give, you know, you give someone a box with all three of those elements in, it's only a matter of time before they pull them apart. The only way to make DRM work is if, you know, one of the elements is abstracted and removed. But, of course, you know, that makes your video then completely useless because you've got no way to decrypt it.
CF Chapter 6, Section 3, Attacks on the Back Door, I think you'll find. It's all which is different from what's going on in Second Life. I just want you to know. But I think you'll find.
Whoa.
I think you'll find it's all in there. You're right, John, because Ed's a little cautious because he got in a little bit of trouble for revealing how to crack. I can't remember what it was. Revealing how to crack another well-known copy protection scheme. So he's probably very reluctant.
Starforce?
To give me a Starforce. Actually, Starforce is gone, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ubisoft.
Well, Ubisoft has taken it away.
At least Ubisoft. And they're taking it away because it's so controversial?
Yeah,
because... Well, because they got hit for like $5 million lawsuit, wasn't it?
Is this the crappy copy protection that actually looks to see if you've got any, you know, any like alcohol 120% on your hard drive, that kind of stuff? That drives me crazy.
Yeah, and it's also got security flaws, allegedly.
Yeah, I think it because it installs in Ring Zero that it literally...
Yeah, I don't want anything in there.
Yeah, it was causing some issues with people's optical drives. Like, they wouldn't work anymore until after you uninstalled the actual Starforce drivers off your machine. And then magically they would work again, but you can't play the game anymore.
There is, and I don't know if it's Starforce, but there is a lot of game manufacturers, EA uses this, use copy protection schemes that also check to see if you have, you know, any clone CD or alcohol 20%, any of these piracy programs, and they won't even run if you've got them installed. Not that you're using them, not that they're using them against their game. They just won't. The game, you can't play the game because you have this other software. And that's appalling. I mean, the fact that it would check my hard drive to see what I've got installed is just unacceptable. So
And again, it's just completely useless, isn't it? Because it's not like it's not going to get cracked. And
right.
So you're just annoying people, annoying average punters, and doing nothing to actually combat piracy.
My point always, and in fact, it just teaches people how to do it. You know, okay, let's everybody
Absolutely.
Figure out how
it
to do
it. It encourages normal people to go out and become pirates.
They're all turning into Ed Feltons. Blizzard has banned 5,400 accounts in World of Warcraft, suspended 10,700 more for using things like using third-party programs to farm gold and so-called cheating. And then in a related story, 10,700 people have all started dressing naked in Second Life. So there you go.
Da-dum.
Are you a World of Warcraft fan, Will?
Yeah.
You said you wish they banned you. You're hooked, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, isn't everybody?
No, I erased it on my hard drive. I had to erase
Good for
it.
You, Leo.
I had to.
You got to go cold turkey.
I had to. I erased it, so I couldn't play it. And it takes so long to install, right? Well, once you install it, you have to go through this round of endless rounds of upgrades.
Oh, man, you should try installing it on the Mac on a PowerBook with a portable CD-ROM. It takes like about 3 hours.
It's a DVD just to install it, and then you say, oh, finally, I can run this. And it says, no, hold on, I have to upgrade myself. And it does it like 4 or 5 times.
The pain, the horror.
Right, the horror. No, get into Second Life. You'll find it much more interesting. I'm Prunface Spatula.
Isn't Second Life like... Don't you have to be like 40 before you can even join that one?
I think you should. I think you should have to be an adult.
I think isn't it supposed to be like for
a mature
old farts?
Adult.
Yeah. I am Nev Dull in there.com, and I am Prunface Spatula in Second Life. And now that this is my 12-step program. Now that I've told people my name, I can never go in there again.
Nev Dull?
Nev, yeah, because somebody had
Dev Null.
Dev Null, so I'm Nev Dull.
Yeah.
Get it? Nev Dull?
Yeah.
Get it? Kind of
yeah, that's hilarious.
Play on words there. Well, it doesn't matter because I can never use it again now because as soon as I go in, I'll be bombarded.
You can use it today because you're not gonna. The podcast doesn't go out till tomorrow.
My last chance. I'm going to quickly run in there right now. So that's
it. Put on your naked suit.
Another 20's in the can. Bye. Is that any? Oh, one other thing I want to say. The videotape recorder turned 50 on Friday.
Woohoo.
Happy birthday to you.
Yeah, you can thank Dolby really die, for that. Ray Dolby doesn't get the credit for that, but he's the inventor.
Really? Did he invent it?
Was he? I thought, wasn't it Ampex?
Yeah, that's where he was. He was the head honcho. To this day, I understand from people that know him well that he's still irked by the fact that nobody gives him credit for being the real guy who did the videotape recorder at Ampex.
You're absolutely right, because I'm reading an article here in TVtechnology.com. Does it mention his name? No. It's got a picture of the, you know, it's kind of a neat story. It was a pre-NAB meeting. A couple hundred people in the room assembled for pretty much a routine Ampex briefing. They just do the briefing, and then, without a word, at the end of the briefing ends, they open a curtain, and the briefing starts up again because they were taping it. And people are like, whoa, what, huh? he's back. How did he do that? So that's kind of neat. I mean, I think it's actually a very clever.
Isn't that a bit of a misnomer? Because didn't tape die a couple of years ago? So can it really have like a 50th birthday?
No.
They still use VD's tape in broadcast studios.
Sure. Roger knows.
They use DVC Pro's tape, DVC's tape.
It all stems from the early Dolby stuff. I mean, he was the only guy, of course, but everybody gives him credit for being really the smartest guy in the room. And, you know, to this day, you know, except for this show, ladies and gentlemen, the Twit broadcast, you will now, nobody gives the guy credit but us.
That's right.
So he actually came up with the Helix kind of concept to...
They were talking about the big four-headed, two-inch RCA monsters that used to dominate.
These things are gigantic, yeah. Half-inch tape.
Done out of Japan, came out of Japan.
Actually, I want to take this back. They do give Dolby credit. They mention the Ampex team. Charles Ginsburg was the leader. Charles Anderson was an FM expert. Ray Dolby, then an engineering student, and later a household name in the audio field. Shelby Henderson was the machinist. Alex Mackey, the mechanical genius behind the rotary head. That's actually a brilliant... rotary head is brilliant. And Fred Faust, who solved
it. It's a team. It's a good team.
Well, speaking of good teams, it's been a great show. I want to thank you, Will, for visiting us from over the pond. It's amazing how well Skype works. You sound like you're right next door.
Well, I would love to be right next door in sunny California right now.
Sunny California.
We've had nothing but rain in the Bay Area for the last 40 days and 40 nights.
But, it's unbelievable.
But keep imagining it. Just keep imagining it's sunny. Maybe it will get sunny.
Well, I hope it gets better for E3.
Are you coming out for E3?
Yeah, definitely.
All right.
I'm looking forward to it. There's going to be some good stuff.
Roger, last E3 was a nightmare for you. You're not going back down, are you?
Not that I've heard.
You'll never go there again. I remember last year's E3. You were just dying.
I was like, never again.
Never again.
Are we going to do a Twit E3?
I think we should. I'd like to. If I did junkets, I could. NVIDIA invited me to a junket to stay at the Beverly Hills Hotel for a presentation down there.
I've done junkets
NVIDIA
before.
NVIDIA invited you.
Makes you feel dirty.
For what?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It wasn't NVIDIA. It was VIA. VIA. Did you get invited to that?
No, you know, Avaya's invited me to a lot of different things over the years. I've never taken them up on any of them because their system is like I don't want to go into it, but it's like it's more trouble than it's worth. Let's put it that way.
They should maybe we should. You know, they were offering free airfare and hotel, and you know, you can't.
What is it in L.A.? Isn't it?
Yeah.
You can walk down there. Free airfare.
I want to get one of these junkets.
Go to Japan. Have Toshiba take you there.
I won't be
That'll
too nice.
You
I really, I won't be too nice.
You'll be cynical.
Our thanks to stupid.com for the sound effects on today's show. So what is that? A little squeak toy, John? What is that?
It's actually the inside of a toy my daughter was obsessed about me busting open so she could steal this thing. It was a strange toy that was from Sesame Street, where that Big Bird walks around and he makes this noise.
So it's a broken Big Bird.
Yeah. Right. Well, it's actually just
the. Can we
squeaker.
Get those on the Twit store?
Yeah, we're gonna. That'll be. Yes.
That'd be great. Our own little Dvorak squeakers.
The Twit store is now going down in history, along with Duke Nukem Forever and Patrick's Box of Crap.
As the never will happen.
The never will happen. Vaporware.
We could be making so much money.
John, tell me about it.
Pre-orders.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what's going on.
I got an idea for it. We'll talk about it offline.
All right. Because I signed up in November with this company, and nothing's happened. So I don't know. Maybe we'll go to another provider. Nobody wants to do it. I called Think Geek. And we have great contacts over there. And they said, yeah. And then nothing either from China.
Yeah, I think they're middlemen themselves.
Maybe that's it.
But gotta go to China.
That's it. Roger, can you help us with the importing? You speak the language. Actually, I speak more Chinese than you. I'm almost positive.
Oh, well, probably.
I studied it.
Leo speaks good Chinese.
I speak good Chinese, but lousy English. I want to thank the folks at AOL Radio for providing us with the bandwidth for this podcast at AOL.com/podcasting. They're our great partners. We are talking with other people partnering with us, and I think that in time we actually may have a store or something anyway. But until then, please help us by just clicking those buttons. $2 a month is all we ask. It helps us keep the show on the air, pays for equipment, and keeps Roger Chang and Tang. And I just said that because it rhymed. Another twit is in the can.
This Week in Tech. This Week in Tech. This Week. This Week. This Week.
So anyway, it was a good one. That was fun.
Yeah, that was cool.
I knew it was going to go longer than you thought.
Huh? It was. There was some good stories in there.
Yeah, there were some good.
Yeah, we thought we had nothing, but it was good.
You never know. And it's Will. I'm so glad you could join us. You were a great addition to it.
Yeah, I like the accent. That phony accent you got's great.
he's really in Pasadena.
Hey, I know exactly what you're talking about, John.
Oh, that's good.
There you go.
See, it was all a fake. he's really in the phone room at AT&T San Francisco, working for the NSA.
Go and you can donate Linden Lab dollars.
Oh, that's neat.
Or Lindens to Creative Commons, and then they can change them back into real world.
This now becomes, in my opinion, for me anyway, becomes the Wendy's hamburger phenomenon. I've never had a Wendy's hamburger. At some point in time, I decide I never will have one. I just don't want to ever have one.
Because it's square?
No, it's just because I just made a decision. I'm never going to go on Second Life.
No, you know what? John, you're gonna get left out.
I'm not going to get left. These things come and go.
Oh, somebody just gave me a German Shepherd. This will not come and go. This is the metaverse, John. This is the beginning.
Yeah.
It's happening.
Beginning of the end.
It's happening. I'm going to try.
For you. It's the beginning of the end for you, Leo. Run, Leo, run.
No, I love it. I can't leave.
This week.
This is amazing.
This week in tech.
Baby.